This is CliffCentral.com.
It is just before 8 o'clock on a Wednesday morning, the 26th of July. Can I play something really irritating for you quickly before we get into what? What are you laughing at?
What if we all said no at this point? Yeah. Would you then just not play?
Yeah, I'd stop. I'd just stop whatever I'm doing and just leave. All right. Listen to this.
Yes, please do.
For real. This is not made up. This is a chick who, you know, people give millennials a lot of shit. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a thing. I don't think that it's especially important or significant if you're a millennial. Every generation is slightly different, but more or less the same to the generation before them. And millennials, you know, there's a lot of talk about how they're this and they're that and they're the other. But this chick is just the worst example of the worst kind of any generation.
Uh-oh.
Take a listen. She gets a job and she pitches up late for work on the first day. And listen to how she takes all of this.
Is this real?
It's real. You ready?
So I just graduated from college last week, Harvard, actually, and I started my new job on Monday. So obviously on Sunday night, I wanted to go out with my friends and celebrate. It was a late night, so Monday morning, first day, I rolled in around 10:30, set up my desk, and my boss, my white male boss, had the audacity to come up to me and say, "Where have you been? Where have I been? Well, I've been celebrating, and I've been partying, and then I've been sleeping, and I've been resting, because you know what? This is a stressful time. And you know what? I feel a little bit pressured and a little bit endangered right now. I do not feel safe, so I'll just leave and come back when you change your tune, Mr. White Male Boss." And you know what he said to me? He said, "You can pack up your stuff and go." And I said, "What did you just say to me? I can pack up my stuff and go? I'm fired just because I was late on my first day to work and because I'm not doing anything? Are you kidding me? I mean, talk about sexism. This is the white male patriarchy at work right here. Talk about discrimination. So now it's Tuesday. I'm back. I've got my protesting signs in the trunk, and I'm going to show them who's boss. And I am going to show them that this millennial generation is not taking that crap from baby boomers and Gen Xers, okay? We are going to do whatever we want to, and if we can't do that, and if we don't feel safe, then we're just going to quit, and that is a real threat. You heard it here first."
How do you like that?
Can't be real.
I'm telling you it's real.
No one sucks that much.
She is 100% real.
And with what? With protest signs?
What do you think of that? Huh?
Okay, but like, again, my incredulity is overwhelming. How did you journalism the realness of that?
I got to be honest, I didn't.
There we go.
No one sucks
okay,
that much.
Okay, but if it is real,
yeah,
let's accept that it might be fake. If it is real, how many people do you know who actually are like that, who think like that?
I saw and I couldn't for the life of me tell you where I saw it, but I saw some clip that was real, and it was one of those where it ends with the pixelated glasses and the like da 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 da,
right,
where this young lady's being interviewed on some American TV show. Young lady's being interviewed on some American TV show, and it's going, "Well, you know, as a young liberal person, do you consider yourself a feminist?" And she goes, "Well, I'm a millennial, so I really don't like labels."
Yeah, I love that. That's so beautiful. All right, Palesa's on the line, and Skype are on the phone. What new phone is that, Amanda? Good Lord, that looks like the most antiquated phone in the history of humanity. What is that? Is that a new? Have we got a new system in here?
Yeah, there's a new system going on here. It's quite confusing, but colorful.
And does it work properly?
Well, we'll hear now.
Okay. Hey, Palesa, what's up?
Hey, Gareth.
Yeah, good.
I just want to say something about metformin, since we were talking about it not so long ago.
About what?
Metformin.
Who's that?
That's the drug that we were talking about, the pill.
I can't just say it again because this line is terrible.
It's metformin.
No, I can't. Palesa, I wish I could. I can't hear you. Again, another shocking telephone not doing its job. I want to throw something.
Netformin.
I don't know what
Net
that is.
Netformin.
Nick Forman.
Nick Forman.
I heard Nick Forman.
Okay.
I heard Nick Foreman, and I'm like, who is that?
Still between all of us
in
the
room. I just want to chime in because I just looked at Amanda's awesome new phone. And like, I was told yesterday that, while on the topic of millennials, that millennials no longer understand the cowabunga finger hand sign for phone me.
No, stop.
It's a flat hand against the ear. Stop. So I'm trying to describe this for those people who want to visualize it.
Sierra, you know that this means phone, right?
Guys, no. Like, don't make us sound
I was told this.
Redonkulous.
That I do know this, however, working in advertising, I had to work on a horrible thing for a college. I can't say who, but they're horrible and they're a shitty college. And they showed us some of the previous stuff that they'd done. It was really awful. And they handed out internal T-shirts to the students. And they had like something to do with it's a rad thing, like time to be rad at the raddest college. And like the students did not know what rad was. Rad is dying amongst the youth.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, rad, dude, it's a stalwart. No. What do you say if you don't say rad?
I've never used rad.
No.
It's not very rad of you, Gareth.
I know. I've never used it. I'm not the only one, right? Amanda, you know what rad is. Do you ever use that? Have you ever used that word with anyone?
No, like instead of rad, I'd use sick.
Yeah, sick.
I embrace sick as well, but rad has a special place in my heart. Especially radical for when you really want to.
Excuse me.
Even what you said just now, cowabunga.
Yes.
I don't say cowabunga. I just refer to these as cowabunga fingers. And I also think that it's one of the most idiotic things you can do.
Explain to Amanda what cowabunga is.
Cowabunga is a
like
Hawaiian greeting.
With ayahuasca or something. Like when you say
I
that.
Like the way you think. I like that your mind goes there, Amanda, but no. Cowabunga is a term used by Hawaiian surfers to greet each other. And that's why they do this symbol, which I think is an idiot symbol to do. Like, hey, man. Idiot symbol. But it was popularized by the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in the 90s, who are still popular now, but they used to greet each other with cowabunga. Yeah. Glad I could throw that bit of history.
Can you name all four of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Obviously. Leonardo, Raphael, Donatello, and Michelangelo.
Very good.
I can name the peripheral characters as well.
Who's the rat?
Splinter.
Who's the bad guy?
That would be Shredder and Krang. With Bebop and Rocksteady.
Look at you.
Also, there's Casey Jones, the vigilante. There's the Rat King who lives in the sewers. There's there's Wingnut, the evil bat character. Then there's the samurai bunnies who come from another.
That's oh my goodness! Good what morning. Is going on?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let us get to see and meet the SABC 8. At least two of them. If we had to bring 8 in, you wouldn't know who was talking at any given time. Plus, the sad news about the SABC 8 is that they really are actually down to 7 because Suna Fenter was found dead in her flat in Fairlands in Johannesburg on the 29th of last month. Her cause of death said to have been caused by trauma and the prolonged periods of unnatural stress that she was put through as a member of the SABC 8. This morning we have Tandega Kubule and Krivani Pillay joining us in the studio. I'm very excited to speak to them. I know what you've already read in the press, what you might already know about the work that these incredible women have done behind the scenes as part of the SABC 8, standing up against censorship, standing up against an SABC that was being run into the ground by Hladi Motsoeneng and his cronies. And I thought it would probably be a very, very valuable thing to have them in here today to explain to us what it must have been like, what it is like for them now, and exactly what the SABC 8 stand for. So they are Futa Kriecher, Suna Fenter, Krivani Pillay, Jacques Steenkamp, Tandeka Kubule, Busisiwe Ntuli, and Lukanyo Kalata, as well as Vuyo Mvoko. And Vuyo Mvoko we'll know from television. He's on ENCA at the moment as their news host. So what a pleasure to meet you, Krivani and Tandeka. Thank you for coming in this morning. Give you a proper introduction. How are you, ladies?
Hi, Cliff.
It's nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
Yeah, I'm glad you two are alive. My God, it's been horrible over the last couple of years at the SABC.
Yes, we thank God.
How did you survive, Tandeka?
I actually haven't yet processed exactly how we survived, but the first thing I think is... we got to really bond with each other and we got to really love each other through everything that happened. And so solidarity is one of the reasons that we survived. The other reason was civil society support. The uptake by South Africans was just completely both their belief in our cause and the support and the SMSs and the support that they lent us, both outside the SABC and inside the SABC, was simply amazing. So also the churches gave us a lot of support, and the other faith communities gave a tremendous amount of support and relief. The other thing I think that was really useful is that we gained insight into our challenge, and we began to see it broadly as a South African problem and a South African challenge. And when we put it into where we are in the history of who we are as a country and where we are socially, politically, and economically, we were then able to both choose strategies and gain insight that it's not really just about us, that other SOEs are going through this. And many African countries' broadcasters have traveled the same trajectory of the subversion of a public broadcaster and independence. And they've had to take on the fight against looming tyranny.
What about you, Krivani? Do you agree with all of that for starters?
Absolutely. There's a sense of camaraderie that's developed over the last year, and everything that Tandeka said applies to me. But also, you know, we depleted some of our savings for personal security, you know, up the game at home, alarm systems, getting people to stand at gates. It's not how one would envision to live in a democracy. And you know, Suna's case was far worse than ours. She and Futa in particular were targeted. You know, we always think about the reasons why. Is it because they're, you know, well, Jacques as well, but Jacques was, you know, subsequently moved to New Zealand. Could it be because they're the only two white people in the group? Could Suna's be more severe than ours because she's single and she lives alone and somebody knew that? So there used to be a lot of questions, you know, going on in our minds, and when would they come for us? There would be, you start to live in a state of paranoia where you're on the road. Somebody's just overtaking you because they need to get onto the next lane, but you think that they're coming after you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, having to come to work, and when I'm in a panic state, I just go to Tandeka. She literally calms me down, and then I've got to go on with the rest of my day.
How did you all find each other? I mean, you weren't necessarily in the same departments.
We are a ragtag army assembled by a madman.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the only thing we can thank Cloudy for, is
he
our
put
control.
You together.
Yes.
Oh. How did it happen? Remind us of the actual story, because you were all working in different parts of the SABC.
We all come from different backgrounds and work for different parts of the SABC.
Yeah.
And one day, Musi Nduli, who can be said to be the founder of the group, put out a verbal invitation to a number of people to come and discuss with her at a boardroom next to her office, what it would be like to challenge the editorial policies of 2016. There were lots of whisperings in the corridors about just how unlawful and how heinous these silly policies were. So she put out that invitation, and then for the longest time, Busi and I just sat, the two of us, in that room waiting for the rest of our colleagues to join us. That's how bad the fear was. They were all too afraid to come. People would say, okay, we're coming, and then they'll suddenly find something else to do.
Yeah.
And then we sat there and we analyzed those documents, and then the following day we went to FXI to ask if there's a legal route via a constitutional court matter out of these documents. But the spark was a meeting, an editorial meeting, where the R2K story was being discussed. The Right to Know campaign was protesting at a number of different venues, and we were all in this meeting. There was Suna there. There was, Futa. It was an arbitrary meeting and a regular meeting, an everyday meeting, editorial meeting. So the head of news then just says, cut that story. We're not going to do that story. And then you know, I said, no, I don't think we should do that. I think we should cover the story. Mm. It's about the right to know. It's about a constitutional matter. And if you guys, if we decide to black it out, then we're really going against the constitution, and that we this thing may well find itself in the courts of the country. Then Futa said the same. And then Suna said this. She said, I may be the youngest and the least senior here, but I also believe that we should not kill the story. Next thing, we were called in and fired, and well, suspended then. And then Krivani came next to here, and she said, right, guys, we're going to fight this. And she organized a whole number of people to fight the suspension, and that's how the eight were formed, because Jacques came to that meeting. Musi came, and then we started painting our, well, we didn't paint our mouths, we plastered them.
Yeah,
with,
you stuck tape over them. Mm-hmm. I remember. It's it sounds to me like things had already become quite oppressive before that, though.
Mm. Yeah.
So just tell us what the atmosphere must have been like, what it was like working at the SABC, because I remember when I was there all of 3.5 years ago, it didn't feel as bad as it must have felt after that. It really only started to become bad maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah, you're right.
And it was when Claudie got his talons into every part of the SABC. I mean, there always have been allegations about how the place is run, you know, from the Thule House, and how calls had come into news editors and they would just do what they were told. And there were very strict rules around how news was to be broadcast, particularly news. Everything else, they kind of, you know, they let some things slide. So how was it working, and what departments were you two in? In particular?
Well, I'm the executive producer for SAFM Current Affairs.
Right.
And I took a break. In 2012, I actually resigned and I went to Prime Media and ENCA for 3 years. And when I came back in 2015, I looked at it as a kind of full circle thing where I could, you know, come and bring in whatever I've learned. But when I got back in 2015, I realized it was far worse than what we'd left the place in. I was suddenly getting calls to say no analysis on Zuma. If, you know, why are you putting people that are anti-Zuma on the show? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? And after a while, I wasn't listening. Because I thought that, I'm guided by the editorial code. And quite frankly, those kind of instructions had no place in the editorial code. But for me, the last straw was when Claudie summoned me to his office. So it was the week of the protest ban. And we have a show on a Sunday called The Editors, where we discuss, you know, the week that was and how different. I mean, it's really a no holds barred kind of show, and it was very popular. And he said, well, he wasn't happy about the previous Sunday because we analyzed his decision. We made him look foolish. He wasn't happy about that, and he kept waving his finger at me and his evil eyes. And he just, you know, I'm very polite and I'm very respectful of people.
Was it just you in the office?
And Futa.
And Futa. Now, no. Was it intimidating to be in there?
Very intimidating, because
I've never been into that office.
It's a high rise, amazing views, and that's the only positive thing I think about that office.
And he sat there and basically unloaded and unleashed it on you.
Yeah. He was with a guy by the name of Anton Hiernes, who was brought in as his advisor. But when we discovered about Anton, he actually had retired and got a really big package from the SABC and then was brought in again with another big package as the advisor to Claudie. And Claudie just went on, you know, pointing fingers and shouting. And even though I put up my hand saying, you know, I actually just disagree with you because you're now treating people as if we're one homogenous society and we're not. And he's like, don't come here, you know, with your kind of rhetoric, and what I say is final. And at one point you feel incredibly scared, because you now start thinking about your job. And then at another point, you're wondering, how did someone like you get to where you are? I mean, you're really silly and stupid.
Yeah, childish.
And childish, you know. And I have been reprimanded in offices before, but it's been done in a diplomatic way. And
or at least a respectful way.
A respectful way. But this was just on another level. I remember having a big lump in my throat when we left his office, and I had to come to the staff and tell them the changes that were made. He also immediately scrapped a segment that we have on our morning show called the Newspaper Headlines, where we'd look particularly at community newspapers and smaller newspapers, and of course the big national ones as well. And he had this bizarre notion that we were helping sell newspapers by having that segment on. At a time where newspaper sales were dwindling, and we never went really onto the online format. We never looked really at the online stories. We were looking purely at, you know, for papers like the Sowetan, they have a larger print listenership, a viewership than they do an online audience. And he just, I mean, his ideas, his thinking, and his lack of logic just astounded me.
But it's emerged since then that obviously he wasn't the smart guy in the room. He was being told what to do.
Absolutely.
He was an apparatchik.
Yeah.
And he was just conducting the instructions that he'd been given at a higher level. Yeah. Over to you guys.
But he was very clever because he's put his people in very strategic positions. Mm-hmm. Up until now, some of his appointees are still there.
Really?
Yes, yeah. They're still there. And his people were sitting in our disciplinary hearing. And from a labor point of view, you're supposed to be given more than 24 hours to prep for your disciplinary hearing. We were given 18 hours. CWU refused to come and help us. I waited in my office for 2 hours because they were in the cloudy pocket. They, a couple of nights prior to my disciplinary hearing, had a dinner in honor of Cloudy. So already you're finding the unions, your labor representatives, you know, schmoozing with the person that you're supposed to be fighting a battle with.
Did you ever have to go to his office, Tandega?
Yes, yes, yes. I went to his office. Cloudy really never liked me. I was once asked by Jimmy to have lunch with him.
That's Jimmy Matthews.
Yes, it was one of those sticky, uncomfortable lunches.
Which department
and she's not talking about the lunch.
Which department were you in at that time?
I have always, well, since I returned, this is my third time back at the SABC. Since my return, the last time, this is the third time. Mm-hmm. Mm. And if you count the reinstatement, I guess it's the fourth time. Yeah. So in the third return, I've always been economics editor. Mm-hmm. I'm responsible for all economics, financial, and business news across TV, radio, and digital.
It's a big job.
Yeah, it's huge. And so I would have to interact with him at various meetings, both bureaus and gatherings. And yeah, I was always blown away by his illogical pronouncements, but also by the charisma that with which he executed this. And at once there was this illogical phase side to him. And then there was this Machiavellian meticulous part of him that had the steely determination to just use money and power, raw power, to just take out different departments and buy them out, literally. Mm. And then once you've been either taken out of the system or bought out of any potential dissent from him, then he would then reimpose people of lesser qualifications, of lesser, you know, he hated educated people, and lesser ability, and then he would then have a compliant department, and these people can then be conduits for his never-ending stream of instructions.
Did he ever say anything or do anything that you thought, wow, he's got a point, this is a very good idea?
Okay, I mean, with local content, there is a point at which we need to promote our own voices as a people, our own culture, and our own companies. But once again, it's that Gupta type of thing where you pervert or you appropriate or misappropriate an existing real cause and then you turn it into something quite perverse, and you are indifferent as to what its institutional impact is going to be on the finances of the institution, on the culture of the institution, and on its ability to live its mandate. So you are constantly trying to subvert the original mandate, but you're using genuine causes, and you are somehow morphing them into something quite perverse.
Did you ever feel physically threatened while you were still at the SABC?
I can't distinguish between my paranoia and what was a real fundamental threat.
So, I mean, you were walking around and everything appeared to be dangerous to you, even if it wasn't.
Even in the ladies, you know, you wonder, you know.
Really?
And you wonder whether somebody's going to slip something into your food in the canteen.
We never ate from the canteen.
I remember people coming up to me and saying, Sisti, which is my nickname inside there, please don't eat in the canteen. You know, you don't know what's going to happen in the canteen.
And then we kept looking at our cars. Remember? because Suna's brakes were cut and she told us about it. So that day, we all started checking underneath our cars. I got the security guy because I don't even know what the brake things look like. So I'm like, please.
And because we were so short-staffed at some point and we would go out on stories ourselves to supplement the teams. I once went out on a story. And when I got downstairs to meet the camera lady, she got out of the car quickly and she said, I'm not going with you on the story. And she said, I'm not going to die. Not for you, dear. I'm not going to die. Please, can I go with somebody else? And I just said, please, madam, get into the car. Let's go on the story. Mm. And she was panicked throughout the story.
I mean, is it worth... I'm just trying to think if I were in that position. You're a journalist. You have certain principles. You want to report the story. You're thinking about the South African public who deserve the news, the truth. But is it worth risking so much of your own life? I mean, was there a point where you went, okay, you know what, I'm out?
I would have said yes if more than eight stood up. And I would have said, okay, let somebody else take the baton. But the one thing that I've learned about being in the SABC 8 is the varying degrees of the struggle. Tandeka herself was an anti-apartheid activist, a student activist. And I learned so much about what she had gone through, being imprisoned whilst a student. And I thought to myself, no one's imprisoning me. What she went through is far worse than what I would ever go through. And I actually need to suck it up. I need to.
But life was going to get worse if we did not stand up.
Yeah.
Things were going to get proportionally worse, not just for us in the SABC, but for the rest of the media industry. Mm. When tyranny looms, it encroaches by inches. Yep. And by degrees.
And they start with the media.
Gradual,
and
right.
if you don't make a definite stand at some point, and a stand literally to the death, then they will encroach further, and eventually they will get you down the line. Mm. You can run, but you cannot hide when tyranny looms.
I wanted to hide, but actually it was my husband and my parents who said, you've started something.
You've got to see it through.
You've got to see it through. Yeah.
But it's tough.
Yeah, it is. Well, you can't sleep, actually.
Who were the scariest people that you met? I mean, you don't need to necessarily name names, but you can describe the kind of people that you were intimidated by after you guys had been fired.
It was the Friends of Cloudy, a group of musicians. They actually got the whole thing wrong.
They also got no money out of it.
Yeah, they got no money out of it.
Shame that all those, that 90% rule delivered zero money to them because the SABC hasn't paid.
And all of Cloudy's, the music friends, thought that we were against the 90-10. They didn't realize that we were against the editorial policies. Mm. And quite frankly, all eight of us are pro-local content.
But
not so much 90-10.
This is what Tendeka is saying. Yeah. It's like you need educated people to understand these things because there are nuanced differences.
Yeah. You know, the one day the Friends of Cloudy were outside the SABC and I had done an early shift, so I was about to head home and the security guy said, my dear, they know what you look like and they know your little car. Can you please use an alternative route? The security guy went out, looked at where these guys were and said, I will escort you out onto towards the UJ campus.
Wow. What I fear the most is a tripartite collaboration between what I felt was intelligence, BLF type stormtroopers, and basically the underworld. And this was a mix of people who have some interest in the whole capture of the broadcaster and who were accustomed to getting their way up to then and who would do anything.
Because there are lots of conspiracy stories around, and at one of the stories that came our way was they want to make the SABC so ungovernable and bankrupt and so bad that the Guptas can come in and rescue this broadcaster.
Or that everyone will turn to ANN7 and to the New Age because they thought that those are good publications.
At one point, Gareth, we had no other newspaper being delivered to us but the New Age.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that happened in a number of other state institutions.
So have you ever in all of this encountered the Guptas, the Bell Pottinger people, the BLF? Did you encounter any
of these? We encountered them in veiled form.
Yeah.
Okay.
In tweets, paid tweets.
We encounter them, you know, in veiled form. They exist among us, but they are masked as you know.
See, I remember last year when all of that that racial uproar started on social media, there were a lot of people who were taken by, look at what's happening. There's a movement. There's serious power behind this. There are a lot of people who feel this way. Turns out that was all part of Bell Pottinger and their campaign. Most people just wanted to get on with it. Did you guys feel that there was something sinister going on early on, or did it only occur to you later?
There's something very similar to the death threats that are received by the other white journalists and the targeting of the white journalists and the messages that were received by Suna and Futa. Then when they talk to black journalists, and they call them askaris and they intimidate them. Those threats that are sent to the black journalists are strangely similar to the ones that the black SABC 8 people got, which says basically we don't attack black journalists, we don't kill black people, but if you continue to be traitors, sit back and watch the blood flow.
And then obviously you can see that in what's going on with Dr. Makosikoza as well.
Yes. Yeah,
also very similarities between her texts and Suna's texts.
Yes.
Well, she was the one who headed the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee.
Yeah.
So she must have been receiving these a long time ago.
We don't know.
Mm.
Do you feel that what happened in Parliament was right? I mean, by then you guys were already out of the SABC.
No, we were reinstated by
them. Had you already been reinstated by the court?
Yes.
Okay, well, let's start with a court case then. How was that?
That was horrible. We had the best, you know, Tandeka calls us the Mandela children.
Yeah.
Because our legal representative and myself traveled with Mandela when we were 16 years old to New York. And Stephen Budlander, advocate Stephen Budlander, he's Jeff Budlander's son, human rights advocate. And he represented us, and everything was pro bono. We won our case, but sitting in that court and having Cloudy's people as well in that court really affected me. You know, there were cameras there. I knew that I had to, you know, keep my head down. But I couldn't hold it the one day, and I ruined the bathroom in the labor court. I was throwing up all over.
Oh, my God. Sure.
And we had to get a court clerk to come and assist us. And you know, Stephen and his team, they were just so great, gracious. They stood outside the door. An assistant came, helped me clean up, and they just walked me out that building so that nobody, you know, would see me and write anything about me losing it. And it was then that I realized that this case had started to actually affect me physically. Sleepless nights, paranoia, every sound in your bedroom, you think somebody is coming to your home. From that moment on, the dogs were sleeping on the bed with me. Sure. You know, it's those kind of things. The labor court was a massive battle for us. And when we won it, it was a win not only for us, but it was a win for all media houses, that no one should treat people in that way.
Other people who had been dismissed started trickling back to the building carrying that interdict, and they printed the interdict out. They had to allow them to come back into the building and occupy their positions once again. So it was a much broader victory than the victory for just us. And then,
but remember, he was brazen. Hey, he stopped us at the escalators. So you know, in the TV building, you work there.
Yeah.
You go up the TV building, and then there's a reception area.
Yes.
And Simon Tebele was there. Obviously, he was working under the instructions of Cloudy, and he's like, "I can't let you in." And we're like, "Now what?" Mm-hmm. You know. No,
and
I can't let
you
in.
Court interdict.
We had a court interdict. He says, "Well, the SABC is going to appeal your labor win. So go home, and we'll call you." And that was it.
Oh, well, then I went to an activist meeting at Section 27 where they were meeting about the SABC matter. And I sat there and everybody, we were talking as if, you know, the struggle continues. And then people said, "Oh, but don't you know that you've been reinstated?"
Yeah.
I was like, "Oh, really?
Oh, really?" So nobody phones us.
Because an announcement had been made to the public that you are reinstated.
Yeah.
You must come and report to work the next day. But you don't know.
Do
you remember, like, he wouldn't leave even when the court had found him guilty of all kinds of...
He still doesn't want to leave. He's still appealing. He's taken the SABC to the CCMA.
But he's had very bad legal advice throughout the whole thing. And as opposed to us, we simply had the best. I mean, the most efficient, impossibly, inhumanely efficient was Aslam Musaji of Norton Rose. And Norton Rose's best, you know.
Yeah.
And we were just gobsmacked by the dedication, the commitment to us and the cause.
Yeah. We had legal teams falling over themselves to assist us pro bono. And
I'll bet.
Yeah, it
was. For them, it represented a major PR opportunity.
For us, it was a surprise.
Yeah.
And also, I think that if you look at the legal...
I think Cloudy must have been surprised.
He was.
He would have thought, why are these people helping?
He was paying top dollar for less. But the thing is that the legal community and the legal fraternity... We're not just we experienced this. We didn't just think it. We're not just crooning for mileage.
Mm.
It was really truly
genuine.
About saying that
principle.
The judiciary and the Fourth Estate are the last remaining pillars of this democracy that don't seem to be willing to buckle under, and that they must stand together. And wherever we met the lawyers and the people on the judiciary, they said, keep standing.
How bad do you think it would have got if you guys hadn't won your case, if the portfolio committee hadn't started its investigation? How do you think the SABC would look and feel and sound now?
We would still be in the trenches. Mm. But there is no way that the people of South Africa would have let us fight that thing alone. And not won. It's just an unimaginable situation, because there may have been 8 of us visible, but there were 800 of us in the trenches. Mm. And inside, our journalists had started to speak.
We're black
on air and to send messages of support. We marched together with our employed colleagues while we were suspended. We marched all the way across this town to the Constitutional Court with them. There is no way that the media fraternity would have let this thing just lie, and SANEF and everybody.
Mm.
Well, let's talk about Suna for a minute, because you must have been very upset when you heard what had happened to her. You guys weren't in daily contact, but during the court case, you must have been.
No, actually, we were in daily contact.
You were?
In daily contact.
So, how did you know anything was wrong? Or didn't you? Did you just hear the news?
Told us that she was ill.
Yeah.
So a couple of months ago, maybe I think earlier this year, her doctor diagnosed her with cardiomyopathy.
Yeah.
I was on leave. She had informed the other of the SABC aide. And when I got back from leave, she told me. And then I said, but Sana, what does this mean now? Because now, for me, the first thing is to go onto Google.
Yeah, and how did it come about? I mean, how did it doesn't just get brought on.
Mm.
You don't develop this suddenly out of nowhere.
You know, Suna was the youngest among us, and she had had a previous health problem. Now, I consider myself pretty tough, but, you know, having to go into in and out of hospital with a hernia and Musi, you know, having insomnia, sleep problems and so on, we could see that we are all affected.
Mm.
And, you know, Futa,
and I'm the thrower upper of
and Futa is like a
and we
hard
know that bathroom is still the bathroom is never recovered at the labor court.
So Futa is this guy who's really fierce and strong. He's a stoic, but you know, after we were reinstated, his face was permanently red. He would just sit in his office
anger
and cry.
Oh really?
So We could see that we are all suffering, and Suna had a weaker physical constitution than the rest of us. And eventually we could see that Suna's body is packing up and that she seems tired.
Mm.
We were in a meeting with our
new lawyers,
Weber Wenzel, and there was myself, Futa, Suna, and Busi. And we were busy discussing how to future-proof the legislation that governs the SABC, how to bring about a private member's bill, and how to move a motion through our South African Parliament for a UN special envoy on the protection of journalists. So we were looking at some legal documents, and Suna had, as usual, read prior. She was always well-prepared, and she was just talking through the document, and I was like contradicting her, and she just kept quiet, and then she said, "It's okay, Tandeka," and then she explained herself again, and I realized that I was wrong, but it wasn't typical Suna. Mm. Suna wasn't like that.
Feisty. She was feisty.
She was like fierce.
All and of you are. You have to be to have been through what you've been through.
So Suna would say, "No, man, you're wrong. This is what is going on." And she just said, "It's okay, Tandeka." And then I realized, well, no, Suna is very, tired. Very tired.
Oh.
And then my brother phoned to say, "I'm sorry, Tandi. Suna is gone."
Could you believe it?
No, I was like, I'm going.
I actually was like, guys, you know, this whole fake news thing is just, it's now becoming cruel.
But it's like losing a member of your family when you've gone through such hardship together, right?
Yeah.
When I heard, I just got to the floor. I just couldn't believe it.
I just want to talk about one or two of these other characters, because we only saw them in the news very occasionally and then in Parliament. I mean, did you ever interact with Professor Maguve, for example, or with Faith Mutambi?
No.
Mm.
Maybe you.
Did you, Tandeka?
I've been in meetings where they are.
Mm.
There's this thing called line talk. Not line talk, rediffusion, where I've been to rediffusions.
What's that?
Rediffusion is when they call the whole corporation and then they beam you into all these screens, they beam themselves into screens throughout the country, and on these screens they issue these edicts, these pronouncements and
instructions,
and you will not treat Jacob Zuma like any other of the ANC. You will do this, you will do that. So those are the rediffusions. So I've been to the rediffusions. And so I've seen them in action, and I haven't really interacted with the former minister.
Sure, it must have been quite something to have been reinstated, because then when you go back to work, you're not really sure how people are going to feel about you. It's not always good. It might have been better if they just paid you a lot of money to go away.
Yeah. No, we couldn't wait to go back.
Really?
Yeah. We were missing work. We were missing the deadlines.
We were bored at home.
Yeah. And constantly meeting at lawyers or at civil society meetings. No, that wasn't
Cappuccinos at the lawyers' offices were good.
And the biscuits. But we wanted to go home. And on the day we returned, our teams were dressed in black solidarity. It was picture-taking day. There was cake.
You were like heroes.
Yeah.
We were just but the colleagues that they missed, really.
No, come on. You were like heroes because what you eight were doing was representative of what all of them might not have had the courage to do. I'm not saying all of them lacked courage, but certainly in many situations, they knew what was wrong, they knew what was right, and you guys embodied the right part.
We used to get SMSs saying, we're sorry that we can't publicly stand with you. We have kids at school, or I'm close to my retirement, or I'm really sorry that I have not had the courage to stand up with you, but my livelihood kind of depends on it.
But you see, don't you feel that those people were copping out? I mean, didn't you feel that
we did feel that.
That was weakness. Yeah. Didn't it make you angry with them rather than,
but we understood.
Oh, thanks for the support.
No, but we understand.
It's a very strange environment, and it's it's if one thing, you know, it teaches you that you have to really be soft with people because it's the SABC without all this stuff is a very loving environment and a very forgiving one. And the other thing is that the colleagues were doing the standing up in their own different ways, whether it was writing whistleblower reports to Thuli Madonsela's office, whether it was writing letters to the press, whether it was phoning you up and saying, do you need any documents? I can get into your computer. I'll see you out there, and then they'll see you and they'll quickly hand you documents. People phone you up and they say, can I see you? I know I'm not allowed to see you. Then they'll hand you an envelope, and when you walk away, the envelope has got money in it, and it's got a note just in case you need it. So people did it, did support in ways in which they felt they could support.
And your families must have taken strain.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I was very concerned. Do you remember I came to you guys, I was in tears. I was like, if these SMSs continue, they could find out where our loved ones work and where they live, you know, the extended family lives. And now you start thinking about this big collective. And then I remember telling my parents, you know, I really, really want you to because they live on a farm. I really want you to live in the city for a few days, please, just for my peace of mind. And my dad said, no. If you do those kind of things, you give in. Yeah. And they're not going to change any of their lives. They stand by me, and I must finish this.
My hurt came in when online they were attacking my husband.
Sure.
And
the larger family as well.
Yeah, and as if I am an extension of my husband.
But that always happens with women. It never happens with men.
And it's so insulting and so silly because my husband, in effect, had different interests. My husband, just because he is Mbeki, it was like it was made into a political difference. Whereas these people forced me, pushed me into a revolt against them because I couldn't live with the professional.
So were they insinuating that because he was an Mbeki that he was part of the old guard there, and that
there was some ANC factionalism to the whole thing? And there was absolutely nothing of the sort. I actually don't know which factions exist in the ANC, and I don't particularly care.
I don't think even now they do. I mean, it's so fractured. There are so many different kinds of. There's now a Lindiwe Sisulu faction. There's, of course, the Sana Dlamini Zuma one. There's the Cyril one. Who knows what's going on over there? But it's your job to report the news.
Yeah.
I remember doing an OB, and somebody came up to me and said, I think you're disappointing your granddad. And I was like, you don't even know
what?
My granddad.
Who's your granddad?
Well, my granddad is Mr. K.M. Govinder and Mr. M.K. Pillay.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Okay. You know, and they, in their own right, have been, you know, little activists in their own little spaces.
Sure.
And I'm disappointing my granddad's because Solidarity represented me at my labor court. But nobody bothered to find out the fact that I was not unionized, that I phoned Bamao. Bamao couldn't help me because they already had a disciplinary the next day.
Mm-hmm.
I phoned CWU. CWU agreed to represent me and never pitched at my office to help me build up a case. I got to my disciplinary hearing the next day. There was no CWU representative there, despite my numerous calls, having signed my membership form, brought cash to, you know.
It almost makes you go, what's the point of a union?
Yeah.
You know?
And then when I bring that up to the unions, they say, but you were not a member. And I said, yes, I understand that. But as a union, when somebody asks you for help, regardless of whether you're a member or not, you should help them. And on a labor case like this, I mean, I brought my membership form, signed everything. As an EP, I didn't really need to be part of a union until last year. And Johan, I mean, what was that guy's name from Solidarity? He was there. He said, I'll represent you. And when I came out and I walked with the Solidarity lawyers, the amount of hate mail I received from people saying, you're a sellout and you've sold out your family and you've sold out this and you're with Solidarity, it really hurt me. My dad didn't speak to me because he felt that Solidarity was representing me. And that's when I heard about stories of the past.
Meanwhile, they were the only ones who were prepared to help.
Absolutely.
Tandega, when you were at the SABC Commission of Inquiry, the parliamentary inquiry into the board, did you feel any extra pressure on you to deliver any kind of testimony in respect of Claudia and what was going on than normal?
No.
Because it's in parliament?
No, I didn't feel any pressure to do anything other than live up to the oath that I took there, which was to tell the truth.
Wow. And did you feel it was a welcoming sort of place that the commissioners were trying to create an environment where you could be truthful?
Well, I had to take that risk and believe that they were, because we were desperate for solutions and still want solutions.
When last did you hear from anyone in the camp of people who tried to get rid of you? When last did you hear anything from any of them? Have the death threats stopped?
We live with them every day.
They're still
threatening
you? We work
in meetings with... No, not the threats.
Okay.
The threats have stopped.
But they're all still there.
Yeah, we're together in meetings every day.
How does that feel?
Odd.
It must be odd for them too, because now they're on the losing side.
But Gareth, people, I believe that everybody has a chance. Everybody has second chances. But it's what you do with that second chance that matters. If you're still going to be stubborn and stick in your heels and you know, have these preposterous make these really ludicrous statements, then you're wasting a second chance to make things right.
But we've received, there's a bit of detente happening, and it's because we all have the obligation to embark on a new editorial review policy. So we have to do now what Musi invited us to do way back then. It's just that the invitation is not just extended by Musi, it's extended by the new interim board. So we were in a meeting yesterday and we are very, very hopeful that the new editorial policy that we are going to take to every nook and cranny of the country, asking South Africans what they feel the new SABC should be like, and what it should represent, and what we should broadcast, and what should guide us. Well, we're part of that process, and we're really, really dedicated to it. And so in the interests of that, we had to find detente with the people who had previously persecuted us.
Mm.
But if we hadn't done that and accepted the apologies, what would a pound of flesh be worth in a year's time? What would a pint of blood of an enforcer be worth in a few months' time?
Mm.
And so we chose to step into the light with them to actually now design and build a new SABC. Anyway, negotiated settlements are in the DNA of this country.
Mm.
Have you always felt that the SABC is worth rescuing?
Yes.
Always felt it.
Because a lot of people have said, well, the best thing that could happen here is that the SABC actually falls apart and fails.
No, Krivani asked the ad hoc committee to throw us a lifeline, and they did. And we are holding on to that lifeline with all we have in our beings, and we are accepting the responsibility to actually contribute to a positive new SABC. And that is a privilege, that opportunity to build again an institution that had been so vandalized and wrecked by the evil forces in this country. So now that we have the opportunity to build it, we feel exceedingly fortunate and privileged and honored to be part of it. And really lucky to live to that point, sure. to be able to build again.
Well, listen, from someone on the outside looking in, congratulations, first of all, on all of you, and obviously posthumously for Suna as well. All of your efforts, your courage, your just fortitude, your inability to be swayed by pressures and threats and danger. I think it's an incredible thing. It shows you the tenacity and the character of so many people in this country. And you eight are really, whether you like it or not, I'm going to call you heroes. What you've done is tremendous. And if the SABC does survive, and if the SABC can regain the audiences that it once had, because they've all gone. They're depleted. Mm. They're not all gone, but they're much, much smaller than they've ever been.
Yeah.
And trust and credibility have to be built from scratch. If there's any group of people that can do it, it's going to be you guys.
Inshallah, we'll get there. Mm. And we'll never forget Suna. You know, we are involved in the process of trying to name a very nice, nice protea. I would like the pink one to be named nationally the actual flower after Suna. And that it be the freedom of expression protea, so that we never, never, ever forget it.
Well, Tandeka, thank you so much. Okay. Karani, thank you so much.
Thank you, Gary.
Pleasure
thank
to meet
you, so
you both.
Much.
Wow. There we are. If you don't think that there are good people in South Africa who are fighting at every level for what is important and what is right, then you haven't been listening. Two of the SABC 8, Tandeka and Krivani, just sharing with us the real inside story of what happened there. Sia, quite incredible, huh?
Whoa. Yeah. This is both eye-opening, it's terrifying, but it's a must-listen, and we all need to be conscious in knowing more about this. Absolutely.
Well, we often focus on the stories of struggle that have preceded this one, the stories of struggle that led to 1994. But in some ways, these struggles are the ongoing ones. These are the people who they'll write the books about in the future. And I think they'll write very favorably about these women who we met this morning. Thank you both very much. And thank you for joining us this morning on cliffcentral.com. Let's wrap it up with a little bit of unnews today. And then we will be back tomorrow between 6 and 9 with some more. You want some more? Well, you're going to have to wait until tomorrow. All right, excellent. We've also got lots of other stuff to talk about tomorrow, so don't go too far away. And there's plenty to come up on cliffcentral.com today. Do you want to tell us what's up next, Sia?
Yep, carrying on with Uncensored Conversations. It's Frankly Speaking coming up at 9 a.m. At 10, we have Womandla, 11, G-Man, the Ad Man. 12, Futurology, 1 p.m., 360 Biz. At 2 p.m., The Worst Guys. At 3, we have a repeat of The Gareth Cliff Show. And at 6 p.m., formerly unbranded, it's the Brain and Brand Show.
Thank you, Sia. All right, here's what you need to know. A man flying from Durban to Dubai was caught with almost 8 million rand in cash. You can't take that much money out of the country, even if you did pick it up honestly from Sachsenwald. Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk were locked in a heated feud about artificial intelligence and the place of robots in our future. What started off as an innocent battle of egos got physical when they both tore off their human faces and fought like cyborgs until someone called a timeout. And finally, it seems that Real Madrid and Man City are both prepared to literally break the bank for the teenager Kylian Mbappe. In demand, this younger is so in demand, the guy from Monaco, that even the Catholic Church have caught wind of the story and may make an offer of their own to buy him. Keep an eye on that story. We know we'll check it out with Ben tomorrow. Have a good day. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9. Be good if you're not. Take photos.
This is CliffCentral.com.